Good evening, friends. Welcome back to The Front Porch. My name is Dennis Rogers, and I am joined by Michael Daniels. How's it going, Mike? How was your Monday?
Ooh, it's incredible. I'm in the new studios today, Dennis. Yeah, I moved, so I'm in a new house, new home. I'm in a makeshift office. I mean, my office is barely put together. As of yesterday, I had a ton of boxes in here and a ton of chairs and no computer, no desk, nothing. And then last night we had to go play Baldur's Gate 3 with you, me, and a bunch of friends. And I just threw everything I had out into the hallway, dug through a ton of boxes to find all the parts of my computer. And I had to build a desk, build my new desk, slap it together. And then we had tonight, and I got that together just enough time for us to play a little late. And then I rushed home from work today, dug through some more boxes looking for my recording equipment, got that connected. And here we are. So hopefully, listeners, you don't hear too bad of a sound on my part, but it's good. It's exciting. I'm loving the new digs, the new place. Hopefully as we go along, I'll have an even better recording studio here with some good sound stuff that I can do. I'm real excited about it. It's going to be good stuff for the show, hopefully, or at least from my side of things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
You're still in town. Going to be here towards the solar eclipse, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm down in Bedford, and for our regularly scheduled weather update, winter's back.
Winter is back. What happened to it? It went away.
I don't know. What I do know is that last, like, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it was almost warm enough that I wanted to turn on my AC, because as mentioned, it's always warmer in the camper than it is outside.
Yeah.
And today it was snowing. So
and to be clear, you're in the Midwest now, because I know everywhere's around for you.
Yes, Southern Indiana.
Yeah. And here we had it always happens. And not to talk about weather again for long, but it's a perennial thing, or annual thing, that I have in February, usually in February, sometimes in March. We'll say, oh, spring's here, you know, winter's gone, because we have this wonderful, like, 75 degree weather. And it always happens every single year. And you'll see all the kids in shorts and running around with no shirts on, and rightfully so, because it's beautiful. But I'm always like, you know, hold on to that, guys, because we have one more snow. And sure enough, this morning it snowed. And I was like, there it is.
Not a lot. It was like, you know, flurries, as we say.
But it's cold enough that snow can happen from the sky.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter because I'm not hooked up to water, but I packed away my heated hose in the truck, in the back of my truck. And if I were hooked up to water, I would have wanted that hose last night, and probably will tonight. Like, it's going to get below freezing.
Yeah. So cold. That's how winter happens. But my advice to anyone out there who's in the Midwest, and as always, and if you're listening, is that don't hold on. Enjoy those peak times of warm things. But come May, like first week of May, is always when you can be like, okay, throw all the winter stuff away, put it in the closets, break out your stuff. You're pretty good to go. But until then, we're going to see April showers. I feel like a weatherman. I'm saying weatherman things. But anyway. I missed something. I was on, because I've been moving and unpacking and building things and whatever. I haven't been participating much in our friend Discord group, but I got back on at some point this weekend and saw there was a message going out. People were getting together to play games for some reason. And I saw you were in one of those pictures. Did you guys play anything fun, interesting?
We played some things that were fun. Okay. I missed out on Thursday festivities. I no longer recall why. Oh, we did movie club with some of the guys or some of the folks in our friend group do an online movie club about every 4 to 6 weeks, something like that.
I got to try a new Mexican street food place. Not good. So Moving on.
Nights. Oh,
that night was reminding me of that when you were doing this.
yeah, that was Thursday. And I decided not to drive up for lunch for salad because it really takes like almost 3 hours for me to do that
Oh,
with all the
yeah.
extra drive time. And I was like, I should not do that. I had too much work to do. And then we had movie club, so I couldn't make it up for Thursday night beers either. And so when I saw some of the guys were going to watch the IU game on Friday, I was like, maybe I'll drive up and crash at Trotsky's place.
Nice.
And so that's what I did. We went to a new brewery in Bloomington. There's
Heartwork?
a Heartworks, that's
Oh,
it.
yeah, I've not been there. How is it?
I knew it was something works. The beers that I tried were good. It was pretty quiet. It's a drive location. So
Yeah.
that's plus or minus. Most of the drive locations in Bloomington are not great.
And what do you mean for this as drive location?
So it's got a big parking lot, and it's not a place you can conveniently walk to.
Or ride a bike or anything. I mean, kind of, anyway.
Which in most of the country is everywhere, but Bloomington is a place with a fairly large pedestrian corridor radius, whatever that's called. And most of the other places that we frequently go, the Alley, the Vid, Nick's, those are all walk places. But this is on the north side. And it was pretty nice. The game did not go well for IU. And so at halftime, we went back to Trotsky's place and played some games. Place and played some games. Oh my God, all those words right. At the brewery, we played a simple game called Dungeon Mayhem.
Okay, yeah, I know this game.
Yeah, this one's. It's Wizards. It's published by Wizards, WotC, Wizards of the Coast. It's a very light kind of card battler.
Yep.
I played with Trotsky and Pat. And we did sort of free for all, which is always not great in those dueling games. But you have cards. The decks are the different classes in D&D, and I see there's also a Marvel version. I've not played that one, but we played the D&D one. I played the Druid deck, which I did not know. I just picked it because the card art seemed cool, and it's very like cute, cartoony kind of art, and having fun with the tropes and abilities of the classes. Mine, I had cards that I could shapeshift into a bear or a wolf,
What, a druid? Really?
a druid, yes. And in wolf form, I could do more damage, and in bear form, I could do more healing.
Okay.
You can also, some of the cards are allies that you put out that defend, right? Your opponents have to attack those first before they can attack you. And then the cards just have simple symbols on them. They have swords that are for attacking. They have lightning bolts that let you play another card. They have card draw, and every deck has a legend card that shows you what all those icons mean. And they're really like five standard ones, I think, like shield for your allies. That's their hit points, basically.
Yeah.
A card draw icon, the attack, the play another action lightning bolt, and the heart for healing. And then the different classes have bonus icons for their different abilities. Like mine would do something depending on what shapeshift I was in, was one of my icons. And I forget what the other ones were. And then you have a health tracker card that has like 10 hit points. And you just fight. Like it's, I've just explained the whole game.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's, it's the kind of thing that you could play with normals, with non-gamers or casual gamers, but still has a little more weight to it than, I don't know, than a party game.
Yeah, right. But not too much, right?
Yeah. It's got a 1.1 out of 5 for its weight
Yeah,
on Board
I would
Game
agree
Geek.
with that. It's and it doesn't take too long, right?
No. It's like we made the game longer than we had to because we had to discuss at some point whether we were going to do this thing where if one of the three of us died, whoever had the most health would win. And so we got very much like basically everybody was down to like one or two hit points when it ended. So we made it a little longer than it needed to be, but really, like, even with teaching time, it's like 10 minutes.
Right. That's not bad at all. That's a good, that's a nice light-hearted kind of game.
Yeah. And then we, at halftime of the basketball game, we went back to Trotsky's house and we played Ready, Set, Bet, which I don't know if we've talked about before.
We did.
We've
'Cause I
definitely played
yeah.
before because we played it at ICG
At
Con.
ICG Con, right.
This is a horse racing game where you bet on a board of bets like roulette. Right, there's a big grid with all the bets. The only, well, not the only difference. One of the main differences is you can't stack bets. If somebody takes a square with a bet in it, you can't take that one. So it's played in real time. I've only played it with the app. I guess you could have somebody rolling dice and moving the little horses, but the app does it for you. There are 10 horses, I want to say. It's all the combinations of a D20, not D20, from 2D6 going from 1 to 12, except that 1 and 2 are the same horse and 11 and 12 are the same
Right.
horse. And then the grid has different bets, and the bets have different payouts and different penalties if you don't win them, depending on how likely they are. Like in the seven column or row, the payouts are all pretty mediocre, and the penalties are high if seven doesn't win because seven is most likely to win because it's 2d6.
Right.
And it's a fun, silly kind of game if you wanna be a little active, be a little noisy, kind of
Here,
game. It's
we played it. I remember the comment was when he talked about it at ICG Con is that as I was explaining it to people how to play, someone commented, "Oh, this is one where I have to stand. I have a feeling I'm going to stand up for this game." And everybody, as soon
yes.
as we started, kind of got the iPad out. Everyone on the table just instinctively stood up and started looking at the board because it's an
Yeah,
active
because
game.
it's real time. When the app is going, the dice are rolling and the voice, the guy on the app is saying, which horses are do, it's sort of simulating an old radio announcer at a horse race. But because of no duplicate betting, you want to be able to reach out there and put your chip on the bet that you want before somebody else does. It's, a little, it's not a dexterity game, but it's a little bit that way. The third game that we played was Sushi Go Spin Some Dim Sum. I don't know if we've talked about this before. I think it was new for Gen Con last year. 2023.
Yeah, I don't think I've played this one.
Yeah, we played it. We definitely played it at Gen Con, and
Oh, yeah.
Trotsky liked it, so we bought it. It's from Game Right, the makers of Sushi Go, and a lot of, I mean, Game Right seems to make a lot of these sort of family games, but a little more complex. It's funny that I'm describing these in the order that we played them, and each one has had a slightly higher weight score on Board Game Geek. Dungeon Mayhem was 1.1, Ready, Set, Bet was 1.2, and this one is 1.3, which is funny. So this is it's Sushi Go themed, right? With the different Asian Japanese cuisine inspired cards with little faces, eyes and mouths and stuff. This one is more it's more how do I want to say this? I don't think it has any sushi. It's different,
There's no sushi.
like dumplings and rice balls and little cakes and those kind of things. But it's got a spinning I don't know, Lazy Susan or turntable or whatever you want to call that. And it has
Like the family style
a little
cuisine thing.
steamed bun, like a bao bun, stress ball looking thing. And the cards are round, right? They're little plates in this spinning platter. And on your turn, you p take one of those. You could take the one in front of you, and you have little plates that remind you which spot is yours. If you're not playing at a round table or whatever. Or you can use your chopsticks, right? Going with the Sushi Go sort of theme
Normal
mechanic. You
thing.
can use chopsticks to spin the platter one way or the other, one slot per chopstick. And then they have all the different scoring mechanics that the other Sushi Go games have. One that I think is unique to this is there are a bunch of menu cards that have four different icons on them. Those score if you, in your set of cards, have all four of those dishes, right? And play goes around, everybody picks. It doesn't have the simultaneous play or simultaneous selection that Sushi Go has. But you play around until everyone has 12 plates, and then you score them, right? And it's got all the usual scoring. If you're familiar with Sushi Go, you've seen, like, here's the dessert, the steam buns. Whoever has the most of them gets 3 points. Whoever has the fewest gets -3 points. There's a bunch of, like, this is worth 6 if you get 3 of them, but if you have one or two, they're worth nothing. All that kind of stuff. It's very Sushi Go, but
Sounds like it.
with a different, spin on it.
Nice. But you guys did a lot then that night.
I mean, we played a lot of games. Now, my trend of the games getting more complicated stops here. Because after this, we played a game called That's It.
Okay, not
It's
heard
a
of that one.
real dumb kind of. Oh, this is another Game Right game. That's funny. This one has a weight of 1.0, right? So we're back down. We sort of peaked at Spin Some Dim Sum, and we're like, okay, we're gonna do these party games. So this game is. Okay, are you familiar with Family Feud?
I am.
So it seems like a dumb question, but the
Survey
idea,
says yes.
yeah, survey says there's a thing, there's an answer to the question, the prompt, and you want to get it. It's that, but there's only one answer. So it's not like you got to get in the top 10 and you score better based on how close you are to the top of the survey. There's just one answer. Okay, one of the questions, so Trotsky just read these and the rest of us just yelled them out. The question was something you put oil on, right? And
Yeah,
so
okay.
there were some inappropriate guesses. There were some mechanical guesses, right? Like hinges, rusty things, car motor, and somebody said some kind of food, and then I said salad, which was the answer.
Okay. Oh yeah.
And
Yeah.
that's the whole game. You just
Okay.
play. I assume there's some kind of rules. It's one of those games where you can just ignore the rules and just somebody picks up the deck and starts picking. Each of the cards has like five words on it. So I assume there's some mechanic to make you pick certain ones.
Yeah.
But Trotsky would just pick one. And we played until we were sick of it and counted up who had. We actually played until, he was like, okay, I've got five left. We'll play these and then we'll be done. But then Pat and I were tied. So we kept going until either Pat or I won another card.
Got it.
That one is very simple. And then finally, game wise, we played a game called Fun Facts. This is by the company that made Just One, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. We played in Vegas, where you write the words on the cards, and if any of the words match, they get crossed off. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do remember that. I wasn't good at it, but I remember it.
Right. This one is like, what is it like? Timelines, if you ever played
I like
Timelines,
time. I did Star Wars Timelines. I played that one.
where you try to put the cards in between where they go for what year the thing happened. It's a combination of that and like a newlywed game kind of thing. So everybody has a little tile thing. It's sort of shaped like a chevron. It's like
Okay.
a greater than symbol, but wider, so you could write on it, right? It's
Yep.
a hard thing you write on.
Yeah.
And one person will be the active player, and they'll read the card, and the card will say, how interested are you in being a part of the first ever Mars colony? It'll take 3 years, including travel, or maybe 5 years, including travel, on a scale of 1 to 100.
Right.
And then everybody writes what their number is from 0 to 100.
Yep.
The active player puts their tile down face down. Everybody else has to put their in turn, going around the table, has to put theirs where they think they fit relative to the rest of the players. So it's a party game, but not one that you're going to play with strangers. Right? You
Yeah.
want to play it with people you know. So you're like, I don't know, is Chris more interested in this than Pat? Is Trotsky, Trotsky's probably the highest, but how much higher, kind of thing. And then some of them won't be 1 to 100. They'll be, ideally, how many children would you like to have? And then everybody guesses, and so everybody writes down, you go, you put the chevrons, and then you turn them all over, and any that are out of sequence, right? They're not sorted, they're not in order, get taken out, and then you score for that round. And just like with Just One, you play however many rounds, 9 rounds or something, and total up your score and see how you did, because it's sort of cooperative. I mean, it's not sort of cooperative, it is. There's no competition, because you want them all to be right.
That sounds like actually pretty fun. I love the timeline games. I mean, just in
Yeah,
general.
I wouldn't say it's better than Just One, unless maybe, I mean, but I think Just One also benefits from knowing the other players.
Yeah.
But this one is a real, that's the word I'm looking for, like conversation starter kind of, get to know you kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not bad.
Yeah. Like I said, those are, they're definitely kind of party games, but Yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised I don't own at least some kind of timeline. I need to go out and buy one because it is a good icebreaker type game and everybody can have fun and talk. But it's also, good to play with friends that and kind of figure out those kind of things. We did, and some of them are even difficult. Like I remember doing the Star Wars timeline. I think it was pretty easy, but there's still a couple things that are like, oh, I didn't remember this before that and that kind of stuff. So obviously it's sci-fi fantasy type
Yeah,
things, but there's a lot
I
more.
bought two or three of those and played them with my family. There was one box they didn't like, and eventually we stopped playing because my dad always won.
Right. That's great. There's always somebody who knows more. Oh man, that you played a lot. I'm glad I brought that up. And now I'm a little sad that I missed it. It's lots. I was.
Well, I have one more thing you'll be sad that
Oh
you missed
no. Okay.
because Chris and Jen went home, and then Trotsky, Pat, and I rewatched Weird, the Al Yankovic Story,
So good.
which is a
Such.
fantastic. It's so much better than it has any business being, but
Yes,
that's
that
kind of Weird
phrase,
Al.
there's some things we can say that, like, if I have a phrase like it should be seen in a theater, I say Dune 2. Or this should be watched with great big sound, I say Heat. Wouldn't say this is better than it has any right to be, Weird Al Yankovic. The movie for sure. That thing I would have never thought that was good. Weird Al Yankovic, I can take with like listen to one of his songs once every couple years and enjoy it. Then don't want that too any more than that's too much. So he's never been my big thing. And then Daniel Radcliffe is always I always expect him to be not great, and then he always kind of surprises me.
If I mean, I think I looked at it and was like, you got Harry Potter to play Weird Al? And then you see him with the wig and the glasses, and you're like, no, he's Weird Al. That's he's got it.
Yeah, he's and not
It's
just like how
fantastic.
his look, like his acting and the performance and the air quote storyline and like yeah, that if we I know we've talked about it and kind of reviewed about it before, but if you're listening and haven't watched it and enjoy a good goofy, zany kind of show, yeah.
Like docudrama where in classic Weird Al fashion, has no, like you have no idea what's real and what's kayfabe. Like he's just never breaks character, that
Yeah,
guy.
he's so great. And Radcliffe does a wonderful job. Now you reminded me of it. I kind of want to go watch it again because it's worth, man, it's worth putting on one of my lists. Speaking of lists, we got a lot of things to talk about here. But Fox has had asked us at different separately different points to he's watching films. He's obviously one of our biggest film
He's always watching
fans.
films.
Always watching films. He watch I often will not admit how much media, film and TV that I watch because I watch so much of it. But Fox is one of those people that can match me at every turn, if not sometimes exceed me on things, oftentimes. And it's pretty great to be able to talk to him about these things. So he has messaged me and messaged you and some other people that he's kind of gone through some things and looking for other films to watch, right? So ask what our top films are. And I didn't have time at the moment because I was moving and boxing up and doing stuff like that. But like, I'll get back to you. I get people ask me this occasionally. And you and I have gone through, we started when we did the 2020 challenge, this very topic of what's our top films and such. And we kind of went back and forth and decided to get a po the poster, which we did for our 2020 challenge, of somebody else set things up. And we kind of, just kind of went with it
Yeah, and we talked about that at length. It was
at length.
not ranked. It was just, here are movies you should see if you
Yeah.
haven't seen them.
Right. And we've gone through some like, AFM top 100 things, and there's a lot of stuff out there. But as we were going through that poster and some other challenges, we really just kind of, I would say, agreed on the idea that any list is has to be qualified or, you know, with
Yep.
what you're saying. And it's just, you can't really do a list, a real list. What's the best of the top. And then as we watched films more and you and I became more and more adept at these things, we realized it's, that's just a silly thing to give somebody a top list. Right. But, I have never actually put pen to paper and wrote down what my top and like organized them. We have our buddy Trotsky, who definitely does that for board games, and he's our biggest board game fanatic. But I just couldn't do that because it's, you know, it depends on when it comes to film and TV. There's just, what are you talking about? Who are you talking to? All of the reasons that you and I do, you know, these discussions are, well, I enjoy listening to your take on it, right? We have, you and I have different things that we like and things we look at and such, and we've always had that. We have a lot of similarities too,
I
but one of the
wonder,
things, oh, go ahead.
sorry to interrupt you. I wonder if that would have been your answer before spending the last 6 years talking to me for 2 hours every week.
Sure, I think so. I mean, that.
Cause that's my, he asked me that question and I'm like, I don't, because he asked me that about board games and I was like, well, what do you mean? Who am I playing them with? Are they new games? Are they classic games? Do I have to get, and with movies, it's even worse because I don't, I mean, if you've been listening to the show for a while, this will not surprise you at all. I cannot give a straight recommendation for a movie unless it is like Lord of the Rings. And even then, like, I acknowledge that Lord of the Rings is not for everybody. Like, if you don't like fantasy, you're not going to like it. Like, I can't do, like, who am I talking to? What are you talking about? Are you talking about, like, my personal movies that I enjoy the most? You know, ones that I rewatch the most. I don't rewatch a lot of movies like you do. Are you talking about classics that I think every, like, student of cinema should watch, like Good, Bad, and the Ugly, and Seven Samurai, and Citizen Kane, and all of that stuff. Like, he probably knows about those already. I'm like, what do you like? It's far, far too reductive to say what are your top 10 or 20 films. Like, I can't give an answer to that because it doesn't exist in my brain.
I agree. I mean, I totally agree. I for a while I said, oh, these are definitely my top five things that I watched when I was younger. And I get that, but I've consumed so much media just in the past 20 years,
Right.
and become appreciative of so much that that list is impossible to narrow down to, you know, a thing. But I did, because I told Fox that he was, you know, it was a good request. It wasn't for any kind of thing. He really wanted to see if there's some movies that he'd missed. Same reason that you and I did the poster challenge thing, is so that we could see things that we just invariably miss. And we still do that, right? And so that was, it came from a really good place, a good, honest, like, you know.
Our movie this week is one of those,
Oh,
and
right, yeah.
something fairly recently that I picked that you hadn't seen, you were like, how have I not seen this?
Have I not seen this? Yeah.
Oh,
So,
Cinderella Man.
oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's got my guy in it. What's his name? I can't think of his name now. Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. Not the main person, but he's in it. Anyway, the, yeah. So Fox had to ask this question. And so I had to say, you know what? I should, maybe I should, 'cause I remember Trotsky's board game list and how, you know, very detailed it is on why he's got things where they are. And he is always at length of when he gets a new game and where he ranks it and why it's such a big thing. And I thought, maybe I'll sit down and do that. I quickly realized as I just started putting things down, what are things that I went through our poster thing. I went through some of our old lists and all of our hundreds and hundreds of movies we've watched over the years. And then some of those other top lists I kind of perused through on my break. To see if there were some that I missed, I just started throwing things out. And if, as I did, one, I realized that my list could be hundreds and would not encapsulate all the things that I absolutely love. Two, it's just felt really dumb to not include this X, Y, or Z for X, Y, or Z problems. It may not be, or reasons, I mean. Let's say Back to the Future. I love that film. I think it's amazing. Is it my top 20? I don't know. It's if I'm in this specific mood, if I'm in this, if I really need to watch something light or with Marty McFly or,
Yeah, it's those movies are very close to being good bad.
yeah, but it depends on when you want to watch them, right? Like I don't want to watch a Ping Pong Summer every day,
No.
right? But I ab when I want to watch it, it is the best film to watch when I want to watch it, right? So is does that make it a good film or does it not make it a good film? So it kind of bothered me, and then after, but anyway, so what I did is I just kind of grabbed these. I ended up he asked for 20, and it ended up like 36, and then decided that I was not going to put these in order. I put them by alphabetical order, and then just
Nice.
sent them to him. And I was like, I refuse to rank these, but these are films that I personally enjoy and could watch. I think what I the best way. To give an honest, fun answer to that question would be, is these are films I would watch anytime and with someone else, not just by myself. Like if there's someone else here and we're going to say, watch a good movie, there's 30, 36 here that I have that I will pick one of these that I enjoy. And I think
Sure.
the other people would like in general, as well. Let's see if I've got that list. I'm not going to go through it, but and it's it's hard to not list everything that I think is wonderful. There was we watched a movie called Cinema Paradiso. Do you remember that one? I really liked that film. It's got so many good things about it, and but it's not it wasn't on that list. But if you're talking about like say cinematic quality or what it means to film or that kind of stuff, then it would make that list. Right, but not this kind of list. What I did was going to say is there was a couple of things I wonder if you would be surprised that I put on there. Maybe not surprised because I think most of these you like. I put on things like The Secret Life of Walter Mitty actually made my top 30. I was a little surprised to think about that, but I truly love that film. And what's the actor? What's the main actor? What's his name?
Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller.
That might be my favorite Ben Stiller movie.
It definitely is for me. I was just going to say, I'm not a huge Ben Stiller film. He's
Yeah,
fine,
same.
but man, I just he was phenomenal in that film, and I don't think anybody could have done it the way he did it. I enjoy The Secret of Nim. Did you ever watch that? I think we
The Don
watched it.
Bluth movie
Yes,
with the mice, yeah.
the mice.
That's
Yeah.
I've not seen it since I was a kid, but that's one of those that I saw so many times as a kid that when I was in the room where somebody was showing it to some of my nieces or nephews, like I remembered every inflection, every vocal tick and
Right.
sound that the voice actors make in that movie because I just watched it so many times.
I agree. Same here. And I don't know why I watched it so many times. Growing up, I
I
was
mean,
it
when
on
we've talked
VHS
about
or
this,
something or
yeah, we I mean, for us, we had the VHS or it was on a tape with something else. That's how it was, you know. There was no streaming, there was no internet. If you maybe you had cable, but we never had cable. We didn't never have cable. We almost never had cable. And so we had a limited selection of movies to watch. We watched the same ones over and over.
And you and I must have had that same one with The Secret of Nim. But it was, and maybe also there's things that were always played on like public TV, like say CBS, and they always played them every year or
Right.
something, that kind of stuff. But yeah, Secret of Nim is one I think that is a hidden thing that I think a lot of people would like, wouldn't know. Surprisingly, on my list, only one like MCU movie. Made that list. And it's not, this is an example of what I was saying with lists and stuff. It's not that I don't absolutely adore every single MCU, which I, most of them I do. I'd say 70% I do. And they're kind of special to me being able to see Spider-Man on the screen or a Captain America. But, sitting down with someone else or other people, a group of people, it's not something I would say, let's sit down and all watch, a Spider-Man Homecoming. Or let's all sit down and watch the Black Widow film. I may really
Sure,
like it. It
sure.
may be awesome, but to everybody? Is it accessible? You know, that kind of
Well,
thing.
and in terms of understanding the assignment, as the kids
Yes.
say, and by kids I mean millennials, not actual Gen Z. I mean, the your list request came from Fox, and you know Fox has seen literally every MCU thing.
Yeah, right. Sure. Oh, yeah. Well, I, you know what? As I'm just talking that, I should have thought about who I was sending it to, because actually there's probably better. I would have made better choices knowing that, because I know most of this film. Matter of fact, I think all of them but one he had seen before, and that one happened to be Titan AE. I think we watched it at one point. It's
Did we?
really.
I don't think we did, because I think I've never seen that.
Oh, that's interesting. It's the like the starts with the Earth being blown up by like CGI, early CGI aliens.
It's animated, isn't it?
It is animated, right? It's got
Yeah.
like a soundtrack from Creed
With a
or something like
Creed
that.
soundtrack? Yeah, I saw the
Yeah.
trailers, but I've never seen it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And it's one of those oh, it's a surprise. This is a good film type thing. It's got I think Matt Damon does the voice of the main character, and maybe, oh, I know her name. She was Firestarter. She was E.T.'s the little sister in E.T.
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore does the voice of the female lead. And it's got a great soundtrack, and it's one of those old school hand animation where they actually animate every frame by hand type stuff.
Sure.
So it's got a special kind of look to it, and it has like extra frames per second, so they kind of have this fluid motion to them, which just kind of captivated me. Anyway, that's one that thought I put Who Framed Roger Rabbit on there. It just it's that's one of those ones where it's like the one of the first I could remember of a real full me feature film of blending cartoons interacting with live action
Yeah,
people.
it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember seeing like some of the behind the scenes stuff when we had like Disney Channel free
Yeah.
trials or whatever. It's a very impressive technical achievement for the time
I agree, and I was just
to have like
how do more people not absolutely love this thing, you know?
animated characters carrying physical props and
Yeah.
stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people just overlook it because of the Jessica Rabbit character.
Sure, maybe. Yeah, that actually the Jessica Rabbit is a really good example of that film. That it like and she's yes, she's a sexualized character. That's
Right.
the thing. But it's kind of like it's a cartoon in a real world trying to bring real feelings. She's just kind of a good example of what that film is.
Sure.
Right? So like, but yeah, I get what you're saying, and that's why it's actually one of the reasons I kind of liked it, not just her, but that reason. So yeah, that's a really good one there. And also it's, if not the only, it's a film where Tom and Jerry, Bugs Bunny, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck are all in the same movie and all in the same scene together.
Sure,
Like,
yeah.
what the heck? How did that, and Porky Pig at the same time, like, how did that happen? They did it. So I challenge you to find something different. Let's see, there's any other, there's a lot on here. This list are like normal stuff. Like obviously like Big Trouble, Little China, Forrest Gump, Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, that kind of stuff. But, see if there was one more. I like Big Fish. You and I watched Big Fish. I still think
Yep,
that's
yep.
a hidden gem people should really watch. That's most of the thing. The Iron Giant. You liked that one, right?
Yeah, I did not see that as a kid, but I watched it within the last couple of years and enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, really kind of a surprise. After all this list, I had to sit back and say, you know what? Is there one on this thing that, if I had to say a number one film of all time that I would watch? And yes, Star Wars is on here. Yes, Lord of the Rings. And I include those. I always count those as one film, by the way. Never say it. It's like Star Wars means four, five, six. You know, it's not just one film. I kind of see them as one thing.
I would say that about Lord of the Rings, but not about Star Wars.
No, I agree with that with Lord of the Rings. I guess it's like four, five, six is a movie. One, two, three is a movie. Seven, eight, nine is a movie. You know, Lord of the Rings
Sure.
is a movie. The Hobbit is a movie, right? Because it's one story. Anyway, the one I put there, last thing in this conversation was, I think of all those, Everything Everywhere All at Once is probably the one film that I will always say recommend to anyone, everywhere, all at once to watch. And it's probably a hill I'll die on. I think that there is a large percentage of people who just wouldn't get it
Yeah.
and may not like it, but I don't care. I just
That's
think it's worth watching.
a perfect example of better than it should be, than it has any
Yeah.
business. Like it's so absurd and so ridiculous and just fantastic.
Just fantastic. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the, not that I prepped you for this or asked you for any kind of thing for you, but when I sat down last couple of days and put this to pen to paper, I'm happy with what I came through with. I may keep this list, add to it, change some things around, because I'm certain that there's so many that I missed that I absolutely love. I tell you what, hopefully you'll be proud of me. The one movie that I think I have picked up in the last, what are we at, 6 years now? 6 years of this show, that definitely made this list, that never would have made this list had it not been for this show, but is also a guaranteed recommendation, is 12 Angry Men. That one,
For sure.
I added that and I was like, yeah, that was the best film experience that I got exposed to from not just the poster, but us watching things.
Sure, yeah.
And you know what? As everybody knows, I'm a rewatcher. I don't think I've rewatched that again. And it almost sits in like the Schindler's List, Shawshank Redemption kind of pool with me,
I
that
could see that, yeah.
it's just watch it occasionally, once every several years or something, and take the impact in and like it that way. But yeah. Okay, I've blathered on enough about that kind of thing. You want to go ahead and go and speak? You mentioned it earlier. Go into our show, Spy Game.
Yeah, I've been watching the time going, I got through those games faster than I thought. Are we gonna have enough stuff? And I completely forgot we have a movie to talk about.
We do, we do.
All right, this week we watched Spy Game from 2001. I am curious now, it almost has to be November. So just about 6 weeks after 9/11 this movie came out. Because there's a big segment in the third in the second act that's set in Beirut or Lebanon or something. It's got some of that old school Middle Eastern depiction. Made me curious. Anyway, 2001 Spy Game. Robert Redford and Brad Pitt, along with Catherine McCormick, who was the lady from Braveheart,
Yep.
if you recognized her. And a couple others that I've seen in a decent amount of stuff since, like Michael Paul Chan and Marianne Jean-Baptiste, Stephen
You said that
Delane.
very well, by the way. Jean-Baptiste.
Jean-Baptiste. I mean, I always know how to say that French because of Jean-Luc, right?
Jean-Luc, right, Picard. John, no, what did Q say? Is there a
You, yeah, that's funny.
Jean-Luc
You,
Picard?
my brain went to the same place. He shows up with like a bouquet of flowers or something when he's in his past, when he's a cadet or something.
Yeah.
He's like, is there a Jean-Luc Picard here?
Picard. So good, so good.
John Delancey.
John DeLancey was perfect.
Yeah, this is one of those I obviously didn't see as a kid because I was 20 in when it came out. But it's one that I've rewatched a lot. I've shown to people. I maybe saw it in the theater. I'm trying to think if that was the time when I was going to the theater in college when it was free on Mondays. But I realized as I was watching it that like every time a line came, I'm like, oh, I know that line. I know what he's going to say next after. I'm like, I know this better than I thought I did. So it's Robert Redford and Brad Pitt. They are CIA agents. And the movie opens with Brad Pitt getting captured, trying to break somebody out of a prison in China, in Hong Kong.
Right.
And
And this is your recommendation, right?
this is my recommendation. And most of the movie follows Robert Redford like navigating the office politics at Langley, trying to figure out what's going on and whether or not he can save Brad Pitt, his sort of protege and friend. And
Right.
you get more of their story through flashbacks as he's telling their history to the other agents. It's also his last day, right? He's retiring that day. So it's this that's the sort of setup.
Yeah. So you had seen this before, I
Yeah,
think you
I'd
said,
seen
right?
it many times, and I don't think you've not seen it,
I had not
or
seen it, no.
hadn't
Had not seen it, no, not
had not
once.
seen it. So what did you think?
So Robert Redford, when he was, I guess, in his heyday, and this was, how old is he in this? Do you know off the top of your head?
I'm guessing 60s.
60s, I would guess. I mean, in the film, he plays a retiring CIA agent, right? So 60s, late 60s would be when it was in.
He would be August, he would be exactly 65, which is the standard retirement age.
Oh, there you
So
go. So that was
there you go.
good. So yeah, so he's in his 60s. This was, mid to late in his career. And
Not quite his appearances in the MCU. A
right,
little
which
bit,
he has been in there. Yeah.
yeah, a little bit later than the movie Sneakers, which we
Yeah,
watched
remember
a
that,
year or
yeah.
so ago, which is a sort of spy heist movie,
Yeah.
tech heist,
Right.
kind of thing, but well removed from like The Sting or Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid,
Yeah.
kind of
So
stuff.
I had, when I was younger, he always felt, sorry, you did say when this came out in the 90s, right? Is that what this was?
2001.
2001, okay. Early 2000, okay. He felt like old guard to me. Like I
Yeah.
was a teenager watching Willow and these kind of sword and sorcery films, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, those kind of things, Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and he felt like serious drama for grown-up adults type stuff, everything he did.
Sure.
So I didn't watch or wasn't really drawn to a lot of Robert Redford stuff. Plus, he had a reputation for being like every lady was gaga over how gorgeous Robert Redford was. So at that age, I was like,
Sure.
I don't care about any of that kind of stuff. I don't watch that. So no, I did not see, had not seen this. Did not care for this one. Think about this one. And around that time, I was still just being okay with the idea that I thought Brad Pitt was really good. I've spoken before that
Yeah.
I always thought he was just a pretty face with Leonardo DiCaprio at the same time. Like, oh, he's just going to be a flash in the pan. And then I was obstinate about it until I just could not put off the idea, deny the fact that these two are phenomenal actors of all time type people. And so at this time, I was still the same thing. Brad Pitt, fine, he's okay. And Robert Redford, I don't want to. So they weren't selling points for me to watch this film, and I hadn't watched it. So that's my reasons for not watching this one. But that being said, now that I have, it does definitely fit the category of I can't believe I've missed this film. I really enjoy Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, spy
Tom Clancy
thrillers are
stuff.
pretty awesome. And this definitely had feel of Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger, the Jack Ryan type films, Hunt for Red October,
Tom Clancy.
Tom Clancy, right? There's a whole bunch of this. There's a whole bunch of these films, and so many are not good. They're just not great. Not that Sneakers was bad, but it was not like Hunt for Red October quality, right?
Sure.
But then some of them really are, and when they are, they're just so good. And this one was one of those. It had a lot of kind of plot twists, hidden things, hidden agendas. Why is he doing this? What's happening here? Code type things that happened, and it's all explained in a very smart way, which is the way I describe the word I describe this movie is smart. After 5 minutes of watching the film, as you said at the beginning, when Brad Pitt gets captured on a prison break, I realized I can't half watch this film. I need to sit down and actually pay attention to everything that's being said, because I'm going to miss important things. And that's 100% true. There's not a scene that something's not being said, that's not being teased or going to call back later, rehashed for reasons, in just a very, very intelligently written piece. Wonderfully acted, great cast, not just by the two leads, but by all the men in the room that were in the CIA thing, all the other casting that's happening. There's kind of a I noted there's one jerk administrator CIA guy, as there always is, but he's cast just because his look is a little annoying, which was just perfectly cast. He's got a smirk that just makes you want to not like that guy, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's well done. I couldn't help but even be stupid cinema nerdy and see that the camera is really well done when there's just a simple shot where Robert Redford walks up to his secretary. The secretary hands him a piece of paper, and then he says something to her and walks out the door. Now, the camera very quickly goes from Robert Redford, pans over to her, pans quickly down to her handing him the letter, back up to him as he says the word, then follows him out. I'm like, I just saw this very choreographed camera move type thing that was just natural. And maybe I'm seeing that because we've watched a couple of really bad films in the last couple of weeks. And you and I have often been saying, like, what has gone wrong with these films? What is it that's bad? So when I see something just so seamlessly come together, I'm like, see how this is just really well done? Bravo type stuff.
Well,
So,
there's a sequence when he is training Brad Pitt. There's a sequence where he tells him about, like technology is on the rise, and it's sort of perfectly placed, right, in 2001. It's just like we're not to smartphones yet, but we're into like, people could have microphones in their ear, right? They could have earbuds,
Well, he's training.
right?
I think he's training him in the late 70s, early 80s when he says that type thing.
Well, it's after Vietnam and
Right.
before the fall of, before the Berlin Wall comes down. So
Correct.
it's yeah, that's a good point. So the movie, like, that's still true in the movie, but at the time in the 70s, we're like, oh, we're getting jets, we're getting better wireless technology, all this stuff. But
Satellites.
the majority of what they're doing in this time is still analog. It's still
It's tradecraft.
situational awareness and seeing all the things, and so the camera is still helping you with that in a sort of Chekhov's gun kind of way, but as you said, a way that you have to be paying attention to. I really wasn't, but only because I've seen this movie so many times, like I could, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that's when he sees the thing in the reflection and all of that stuff.
And it's so smart that it deserves another watch through because there are just so many little things that are subtle here and there that I know I missed because there was just so much. There's one sequence where he switches satellite pictures of the Bahamas with China, this coastline.
And Hong Kong, yeah.
And you don't know why he does it. And then when he does later on, kind of explains it, it's just so cool. It's like, wow, that guy is brilliant type thing. And I want to go back and watch it again, knowing kind of what he's doing and why he's doing it and how he's setting up so you can see what he's thinking. Because Robert Redford, the way he plays the character is just, he is in control of everything in his mind and the situation at all times. Because he's retiring CIA agent, kind of at the top of his game type thing. And he's showing you, as is kind of the point of the film, what an experienced person, how formidable they kind of are.
Yeah, and the way that he does this sort of social engineering to manipulate, to get what he needs, to get information, to get around all these people. I wanted to say, because you were talking about this, and I looked, the director, this movie is Tony Scott. He's the younger brother of Ridley Scott.
Oh, okay. Has he done a lot of other films that I know of? The name
he has. He has. So he directed the original Top Gun.
Wow, there we go. Okay, yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop 2, Days of Thunder, Crimson Tide, Last Boy Scout, okay, Enemy of the State.
Clearly I should have known the name.
this movie, Man on Fire with Denzel. What else? Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Man. Yeah, I should have known this name.
Yeah.
That's my bad.
I didn't know either. I'm looking at IMDb.
All of the things come together. I'm really happy. Thank you, Dennis, for bringing this one in to watch it again, because it was, this is reasons that we get to watch these films and recommend it back and forth like this, so that I can watch a really great spy thriller, because I love them. Like, I will go back, and when I rewatch films, it's because I want to recapture that feeling of, right now I'm thinking of one with Ben Affleck, and it's another Jack Ryan film, Sum of All Fears. And I'm like, I want to, when I pick up and rewatch Sum of All Fears, it's because there's nothing out there that I haven't seen that would give me that cool thriller spy thing. And maybe I've forgotten something and rewatch it. So having the ability to watch a new one, that's not new, but new to me one, is really cool. It's really freaking cool to be able to say, like, oh, here's another one and I missed it. And maybe there's more out there that I've missed too. And we'll get to see something else. So I know that it's kind of a quick thing on me, but man, super thumbs up. And it does make me realize I need to go back and watch more Robert Redford things. Just that are recommended. I mean, I know he's a great actor. Of course he's a great actor. I've seen him in I have seen him in several things, and it's wonderful.
But, yeah. I get that when an actor is like, I mean, I don't know if the reverse is true for women and actresses, but you get the, like, I don't know, like Timothy Chalamet is the new. I don't know. There's some weird way you're supposed to pronounce his name, but I'm like, okay, I guess. Right. But like, it's also like, I'm not generally, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I very often can see that, and I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, I get this from both sides. Like, I see the talent and the sex appeal, or whatever you want to say. Like, it used to be Mel Gibson before he went crazy, or Brad Pitt, or Leonardo DiCaprio, or the surfer dude bro guy, why am I blanking? Aquaman.
Jason Momoa.
Or Henry Cavill, right? Like,
yes, right, yeah.
Like, yeah, this man, this is a gorgeous man, and also a very talented actor. Like, I'm not bothered by, but every once in a while you're like, really, that guy? Like,
right. I can explain it.
He just got this role because he's hot. Come on.
Right. And you know what? Maybe it's because the roles that they do that in, like, you first see them in, that is why they are cast. Maybe.
Right. Right.
You know, like, for example, like, Brad Pitt was, I think his first movie was Fried Green Tomatoes, I want to say. And he had two great lead actresses in that film. And he's just kind of like eye candy.
Sure.
And I didn't necessarily think that Jack Dawson, which was Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Titanic, was all that incredible. Titanic was a fine film. But Leo was, I to me, wasn't like, oh my God, his performance was amazing, but he was just a heartthrob. Obviously, he's proven that he is an incredible actor too, but that was kind of maybe the first thing I've seen him in. And I'm trying to rationalize my thoughts on why I have those emotional feelings, but so okay, I said I blathered on about enough of that. You watch this as a rewatch, still hold up for you? See anything new or different that you liked? What do you think?
Yeah, my big question mark with this was, does it hold up, right? As has been the question with a lot of movies from my past, to varying, with various answers, right? Like Heavyweights, Little Giants, the Little Rascals movie, that kind of stuff. There really was nothing about this. I liked the soundtrack in the first act. And then once they got into the Middle East flashbacks, I was like, boy, they're doing everything here but the sepia tone, like visuals. Like, it's very, just the way that part of the world was and is portrayed in American movies. It became the stereotype. It probably got worse after this, after, like, as I said at the beginning, this movie came out about a month to 6 weeks after September 11th, 9/11. And so it obviously was not influenced by that event, right? They would have been done making it by then. And so stuff after this got more heavy-handed, with things like
All right, yeah.
what, Black Hawk Down,
Yeah.
and some of those movies, just very like, stereotyped portrayal of the people in that region. And there was still a little bit of that, but really, like, minor, comparatively speaking. But all of the foreshadowing, all the subtle little bits, as you said, with, Robert Redford doing the thing, and you don't understand. I mean, I've seen it enough times that I know why he's doing all those things. But seeing the, like, he does this, he uses this phone, he says this to this person, he doesn't want to use his own phone because they'll get the records. At the end of the movie, near the end of the movie, they do look up all his phone records. And so that that's justified. But he goes in and, like, oh, it's my last day, they cut off my phone, can I use yours? And it's just this, like, very, very analog, very social engineering kind of spy craft, in a way that I think I've only read a couple of them, but James Bond in the Ian Fleming novels did a lot more of that kind of stuff, where it's just him and his wits and his charm and whatever, like working to get his man or get himself out of a bind or whatever. Where in the movies, especially in the Roger Moore, Sean Connery era, it became more and more about tech and gadgets.
True, right, yeah.
And in this movie, there's almost none of that. Like, he doesn't do anything with gadgets and tech, except maybe at the end when he's doing some sort of forgery stuff. But
Sure.
for the most part, it's just him. It's just his decades of experience, being at the top of the game, and also taking advantage of the fact that everybody knows that he's old, he's about to retire, and underestimating him. And
Yeah.
he takes advantage of that as well.
You know what's something that makes that so good and also makes this film so good with what you're just explaining here is as a person first time watching this, I don't know if that's gonna pay off. Like I don't know if like I want the main character to be that witty, smart, self-reliant, but oftentimes the script or the acting or the directing or the cinematography or something doesn't do it, doesn't illustrate it
Doesn't
the
pay
right
out,
way, doesn't pay off or whatever. This film paid off those hopes all the way through because of what the things you're describing, you know. Sorry to interrupt you there, but yeah.
No, you're good. Yeah, so for me, like I don't know that I would recommend this to everyone.
Sure.
But you know, if you like any of the stuff you mentioned, the Tom Clancy adaptations, the you know, anything with spies and espionage, I mean, that's the same word, but you know, James Bond, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just solid. It's just a great film, I think.
Yeah, I would say that if you liked those films, you've probably already seen this one, but I did and hadn't seen this one. So, yeah, this feels like one that people were a fan of this genre would have seen before. I'm just kind of now embarrassed that I hadn't seen it. Can I
I
go into just
mean,
a real quick 5-minute spoiler section here? You want to ring a bell? Because I want to say something about
sure.
plot discuss.
All right, we're gonna talk spoilers on Spy Games. So if you've not seen it, don't want to be spoiled. Skip ahead.
Okay, so the ending, kind of like the crux of the whole film and how it comes together, was just, I mean, it just makes me feel good because it has a point and has a message, not like a big political message, they kind of like a point of the show, but they never say it, like his motivations or things that he does and why he's doing it all. They never say it. It's very much a show it but don't say it type thing.
Sure.
And maybe, and I just kind of want to hash it out a little here with you. Maybe you can see if I'm seeing something wrong or not. It feels like, and I'm going to watch this film again so I can see it again, but it feels like there's a point earlier on where he makes, through the acting of Robert Redford and the scene where he starts to train this guy, he makes a point to say, no asset is worth it. You know, you
Right.
choose yourself over the asset, right? And something I liked about that is, in hindsight, it's a clear setup, that line.
Sure.
I
Yeah.
the way it was delivered, film shot and acted between both actors when it said, did not feel like, oh, that's going to come back. It kind of did, but not like this is the point of the film, which was the point of the film, I think.
Yeah, it also just feels like this is a guy who's been doing this for a long time. He has a sort of code or I guess code is the, you know, that's his law, right?
Right.
He's lawful neutral, and these are his, you know, these are his rules. This is how you survive in this life,
And he's
in this
teaching this
world.
guy those rules, right? Or
And there
those
are
lessons.
several, yeah, and there are several lines that emphasize that. The one you said is the, you know, don't get personal. Like they are assets, they are people. What we're doing is bigger than, you know, individual people. He also says the thing about money.
About
It
money,
did
right? Yeah.
kind of crack me up that his life savings is less than 300 grand, and he's gonna buy a vacation house in the Bahamas
Yeah, right.
with that. Like, oh, this is an over 20-year-old movie.
I immediately wanted to go up and look at that as inflation for that
Yeah,
today.
exactly.
That money. Yeah, so one thing this film does is, so it sets up a thing like, oh, this is going to come back. So that could, you could potentially hear that that line or those lines and say it's going to come back. And they kind of do early to make you not think it's the point of the show. And again, clever, smart way. There's a whole part where he goes and Brad Pitt goes to rescue a guy from one side of the German wall, through an op, right? And
Right.
he gets too personal about it. And Robert Redford chastises him. And it's that feels like the message he gave earlier is supposed to, inform you about this scene and be a bit of a character development. But really, what he says earlier is the entire point of the whole film. But by giving us that middle example of Robert Redford letting an asset get kind of too personal, but still letting him, giving him up type thing, that it was just a character building moment. But I really, really appreciated at the end, you kind of find out that Robert Redford did exactly, at least this one time, the opposite of what he recommended, because it's the end and
Right.
he's decided that all of the things that he, you know, all the things worked, served him well, but this time he's not going to let that happen, not going to let his kind of emotionless state end that way. And correct me if I'm wrong, the whole bit about his wife, like they said, he was only married one time. And it makes you wonder, and I have to watch it because, again, because I don't, there's so many things happened by at one time, that maybe he had a relationship with a woman in the same way that Brad Pitt had a relationship with this woman. And he knew it. And that's why he kind of burned every bridge and did everything to sacrifice who he, you know, his career and life and everything like that at the end
Yeah,
there.
well, you don't, I mean, you never see him with a wife or a partner, so it's, I've never really sort of interrogated that part of it, aside from it just being yet another thing that he pulled over on the rest of the agents at Langley. But it tells you something about his character,
It
right?
does.
Like, he's, you know, throughout the film has seemed like a guy who's married to the job, right? And they do this thing, and you know, he lets them think that he's been married four times, and he keeps dropping these names, and he uses the code name for the op in the clever, like, dinner out is go, and he's like, what kind of, you know, you see them sort of whispering, like, what way of that is that, you know, what kind of, what is the line, like, what kind of way to talk to your wife is that? And the guy says, why do you think they keep dumping him, right? Like, this is this guy, like, he's not an emotionless robot, but he's the ultimate spy. Like, he has no personal life. He separates all of his emotions from the job. And then you find out he was only married once, which, you know, in film parlance tells you this is a man of character,
Who
right?
loved
Who
one
had
thing
one,
person, right?
who loved one woman, and that's it. And again, the whole, yeah, what turns out to be the whole point of the movie is that he breaks all his rules one time to both save and apologize to this junior agent who was his friend.
His friend and saw, maybe perhaps saw the world the way that a young Robert Redford character would have wanted to. Like he did take some things personally. He did go there off the books to rescue this person that he loved. And you know, when they're the CIA agents are in the room and they find out they're discussing that he only had one wife and that thing, they're doing that with an overlay of Brad Pitt in the helicopter, all beat up, looking over at the other helicopter of the woman that he loves, and she's looking back at him, and they're saying the this part about him only having one wife, and these other assets weren't anything to him. They were just other things. And it just made me feel like, oh, he probably had one like this, and he's doing the thing that he wished he would have done. And Brad Pitt did it instead of him. And I don't know. It's just that example of this film didn't tell us things. It just showed us stuff. And it has a lot of information that did get, we could piece things together if we wanted to. And it just excites me. Almost gives me little goosebumps here and the way that they did that from the script and the directing and the writing so
Yeah,
well.
and the whole you know, climactic sequence at the end with the, as you know, as he's driving away, they're piecing, it's like the end of Usual Suspects, right? Where like all the things that he did, all the dominoes are falling, the house of cards is collapsing, whatever euphemism you want to use for that. You know, to sort of, in, you know, in case you didn't put it together, here's all the pieces. Like, here's these threads, this foreshadowing that's been happening almost from the beginning of the movie, to this one, you know, like noble sacrifice.
I particularly loved, I think I said it out loud while I was watching it, was in one day, behind in secret, but also in plain sight of the entire CIA agency and the top of everybody, this guy executed a military extraction for a prisoner in China without anybody knowing and completely made it happen. Right? Like, and they didn't know it happened until after he left and the military went in and say and rescued them. I was like, this is how good he is. And we didn't see him planning or anything. He just kind of knew the right things to do and the right things to say and how to do it just barely enough to make this thing happen. And I was like, man, that dude is one cool dude. Right? Like the coolest dude.
He's extremely, that's one of the things they talk about in like writing or character development. Like, you can make characters like not likable. What is it? There are several. One of them is competence, right? And Robert Redford's character, Nathan Muir in this movie is at the max competence, right?
Yes,
Like
right.
absolute, he is owning every situation that he walks into.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I mean, every room he walks into that thing, when you don't think he absolutely is. He only says that when he's kind of training him. Like they're talking about, like, you see everything, you note everything, you dismiss everything, and it's like breathing. I'm like, and Brad Pitt's like, what do you mean? He was like, you don't think about breathing. I'm like, wow, just that dude is so cool. So that's enough of the spoilers. I just had to like talk to you about it because it was just so good and such an example of show don't tell. Sometimes you can tell, but just good. We didn't mention writers in here, but this is one of those ones that if whoever wrote it was good accolades and hopefully got some recognition from it. Okay, so crazy that film. I don't know if we're gonna be able to top it for next week, especially not I'm not with because I get my choices happening
Yeah,
now.
it's
What are we gonna watch?
your
Oh,
turn.
I'm gonna do another spy thing. We talked about it last week with a not great film. I can't remember which one we watched. Oh, The Tourist. Let's watch Salt. I'm gonna watch Salt this week. That is with
So,
Angelina Jolie.
Saltburn?
Nope, Salt. Not Saltburn. Totally different thing. This is with
Salt, you
Angelina
got it.
Jolie. It is a spy thriller as well.
You got another Angelina Jolie movie after the last one.
After the last one. I'm hoping to redeem it. I've only watched this once or twice, I think, maybe once in when it first ish came out. I remember enjoying it. That's what that feeling made me feel like The Tourist would be really good. I can't possibly see how it would hold up as be as good as the spy as Spy Game. But it's,
Oh, I kind of recognize this poster.
yeah, it's more actiony. We'll put it that way. It's more, think of it in the way of Mission Impossible as opposed to, spycraft type thing, but
Oh, and Liev Schreiber and Chiwetel Ejiofor.
What's his
Hopefully I got it
name?
right.
We just main guy in Spy Game. What's his name? Robert Redford never
Robert Redford.
leaves like Langley in that film. He's
Right,
always in an office thing. And he did all the things we talked about, how cool he was and everything, but without ever leaving the office. This isn't that. Salt is more like field agent. She would be the Robert Redford kind of character or Brad Pitt kind of character. So put your expectations towards that way instead of the other way. It's a more actiony.
right.
Salt. That's what we get to watch for next week. Cool. What else do we got this week? Dennis, I watched started watching the show called The Gentlemen. It's a Guy Ritchie
Guy
series.
Ritchie, yeah.
I am about it's they're hour-long episodes, so they're long. I think there's like eight of them. So they're long, which we typically don't like for watching long runtime series, but I enjoy Guy Ritchie films in general. I've heard reviews from friends who really like Guy Ritchie things, and they've kind of called it good in the end, mid otherwise. I don't know. I love Guy Ritchie's dialogue, and this is in the first three episodes I've watched. It's just chock full of Guy Ritchie dialogue. It
Okay.
that
Yeah.
English kind of lingo.
Some of his recent stuff is like a lot of Americans or British actors doing American accents, and I'm like, why is he doing this? But
Yeah. And so this is definitely heavy British drug mafia type stuff, which I think is his milieu, his forte. So
thought this was a movie,
I thought it was,
but it's a
there was a movie called, is it called The Gentleman That He Wrote?
Oh yes, and I watched this recently, I
Yeah.
think, with
Matthew
McConaughey
McConaughey.
and Charlie Hunnam. Yeah, because they're at least Charlie Hunnam is doing an American accent. He's
Yeah,
English.
and I liked that film just good enough, but it was weird. It had some meandering parts to it. This one, again, I'm only
Yeah.
three episodes of eight into it. But I really enjoy the parlance, the talking. It definitely has the Guy Ritchie kind of things
Banter.
happen that are unexpected, and you just roll
Oh,
with the
sure.
punches and you stay cool. You stay as a cool person. And occasionally there's the guy that's not cool. Like he's like, just go. When I say not cool, he's like uncool, right? And he's a character. They have that kind of thing in here. It just feels very Guy Ritchie, and I really like it. So far, I would definitely put it on par with the Gentleman movie. It's weird that he would call it the same thing. But yeah, I right now just talking about it, I kind of want to go back in there and watch more of it because I just like that nice, easy banter that I don't understand English lingo or British lingo. But it's very cool.
Nice.
What else? Oh, I did watch a show called Ricky Stenicki with who's the other wrestler that's not The Rock? What's his name?
John Cena,
John Cena. Yes.
who was
And
naked at the Oscars.
yeah.
I don't know if you've seen clips of that.
It's terrible. Don't watch it.
Okay.
It's a new one out, so I think it's caught on Amazon, I believe. I thought it would be a little funny because he tries to do some funny things. Not good. Just bad writing, bad dialogue, bad acting. Just really sophomoric. I watched the
Sure.
trailer. I thought, oh, this could be cute and funny and lighthearted. And it's just like, ugh, I hate all the character. Oh, it's also got, he was in High School Musical. He was in The Greatest Showman. Young. He's one of those guys that I don't
Oh,
think acts very well.
he's not a Jonas, but the
No,
other,
but you're in the right kind of
yeah.
category. He was decent in The Greatest Showman, but I can't remember his name. But he's also a character in it too. And believe it or not, he's the best actor, and he's not great in it. It's about three friends who, when their kids get into some trouble and accidentally blame what happened on them on some guy named Ricky Stenicki, some kid, and they get away with
Okay.
it, and they're like, we're just going to blame, make up lies for the rest of our life if we want to do something, and blame Ricky Stenicki for it. And they grow up and get older, and they're like, oh, we got to skip the baby shower because our friend Ricky Stenicki has cancer, and we've got to go see him in the hospital. And then they go to a concert, or we go to Atlantic City or something instead. And then they stumble upon this really, really terrible, we're going to say air quotes, actor, which is John Cena in Atlantic City. And he then they come back home, and they're pressed by their family to finally meet Ricky Stenicki, and then they hire him to come in and play Ricky, and air quotes hilarity ensues, which there's no real hilarity at all. And I'm like, this sounds like a good setup. Somebody clearly pitched this during the writer's strike, and it was probably a non-writer, regular writer, and you can tell. So, total pass on Ricky Stenicki. Do not let the trailers fool you. And John Cena, as The Rock does, occasionally makes a dud, total dud, and this is one of them. So, do not watch that one. Just want a okay. fair warning.
Sure. Let's see. I don't think I've seen anything new worth recommending. I'm still enjoying the animes, Frieren and Dungeon Meshi, Delicious in Dungeon.
Yeah, I watched two more episodes
And
of this. With
Frieren is Beyond Journey's End is a subtitle of that. There are four or five episodes of Shogun out so far.
Gotta
I'm
start that,
liking
man.
it.
Gotta
It's
start that.
probably my biggest struggle with that is I have a hard time differentiating a lot of the characters apart from the lead. Like, there's one white guy, so he's really I mean, there are a
He's the
couple
obvious
others,
one to
but
watch, yeah.
there's mostly just one, and I recognize him. And there are not a lot of female characters you see a lot, which makes sense because it's 1600 Japan. But Anna Sawai, who was in Monarch,
Oh yeah,
is on screen a
you
lot.
mentioned her before, yeah.
And I like her performance in this. It's very nuanced. Like, her, you know, she's as they would say, Christian, but a Catholic Japanese, you know, converted by the Portuguese, and he's English, so he's Protestant. But she is his interpreter, right? She was given that responsibility by her lord. I don't know if he's daimyo or whatever. It's all, you know, they're speaking Japanese, but
Right.
there's subtitles. But then a lot of the other characters, there's like a sort of council. They have a different name for it. And other like lesser lords and this kind of political maneuverings. And there are a fair number of them that I'm like, who is that guy again? Is he this one or the other? Which is just me. Like, I don't think it's because they're Japanese. But if this were an anime, they would make the characters very visually distinct,
Right.
right? They would have different kind of armor, or even probably not different hair colors. That is usually in more playful modern, and especially female characters, they give them all different hair colors and very distinct visual styles, so there's no chance you get them confused.
Right.
But in a live action, that's not really an option. And they're wearing what I assume are very accurate period, like, kimonos and suits of armor and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've had that experience. And I know you said it's just you, but I've done that before when I'm like, the characters oftentimes, like you said, it's not just that it's like, say, all Japanese or something like that. It's that the characters' personalities, at least so far, it sounds like, haven't differentiated themselves from each other, right? There's
Well,
nothing.
and that's true too. Like, they're very outwardly polite and observing all these customs and things. And it's just, I don't know, it's just a weird kind of face blindness. Like, before I watched any of Friends, I would have told you that Joey and Chandler look like I can't tell them apart.
Sure.
And
Well,
they're not, like, sure, David Schwimmer looks different from Matt LeBlanc or Matthew Perry, but Matt LeBlanc and Matthew Perry do not really look that similar.
right.
It's just,
No, it's
whatever.
it's if I watch it's since it's Japanese, maybe think of this a film that I enjoyed with Tom Cruise was The Last Samurai. And there are, he goes to a village with Japanese people in it. He's an American over
Yeah,
there.
I
Not sure, sure
saw
this.
that years ago.
Yeah. And there are several Japanese in there, but I can tell you that almost immediately every character that's a speaking part character, they have very distinct personalities. And that's what, you know, oh, this is the trainer guy that didn't like him. This is the kind of guy that always smiles. Oh, this is the guy he calls Bob that is skinny and won't talk, but kind of always just is stern. And then there's the guy that's wisdom thing and he speaks differently. I'm like, so the actors and maybe the script, I think maybe the actors gave performances that made you note them. But then I've watched other films that their characters just didn't do that. Maybe in your case here, you haven't gone, Shogun hasn't gone in on enough for you to make those connections
yet. I mean, it's only four or five episodes.
Right. I know I'm looking for, just from your reviews and some other people speaking too, I kind of really want to watch it. So I'm looking forward to finding time. I'll finish The Gentleman is what I'll probably do, and then jump on that one.
Sure.
Cool, man. I think we did it. Saved a lot of lives today.
Yeah. All right. You've been listening to The Front Porch. This is episode 341. Thanks as always to our friends at LRM Online. You can check them out for reviews on things. If you would like to reach out to us and tell us, your favorite movie we may not have seen, we can add to the list. You can reach us via email. Our address is frontporchpod@gmail.com. Or you could go to our website, frontporchpodcast.com, and find contact forms there to reach out to us. I will also put links to all of the games and films and TV shows that we talked about this week. If you enjoy The Front Porch, please consider subscribing on the podcatcher of your choice. And while you're there, if you would leave us a favorable review, we always appreciate that. It helps out a lot in those rankings. As always, thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Michael.
For The Front Porch.
Night, everybody.
See you next time.